From Welcome Villain Films, the studio that brought you the horror hit Malum, as well as Beaten to Death and Hunter Killer, comes their newest nightmare, Mind, Body, Spirit, now available on digital. Directed by Alex Haynes and Matthew Miranda, and produced by Dan Asma, Mind, Body, Spirit follows Anya, an aspiring yoga influencer, as she embarks on a ritual practice left behind by her estranged grandmother. What starts as a spiritual self-help guide quickly evolves into something much more sinister, as Anya becomes increasingly obsessed with the mysterious power of the practice. She unwittingly unleashes an otherworldly entity that begins to take control of her life and her videos. Now, Anya must race to unlock the truth before her descent into madness threatens to consume her mind, body, and spirit. During its festival tour, with stops at Chattanooga Film Festival and the Unnamed Footage Festival, Mind, Body, Spirit garnered praise from critics who call it a found footage version of Hereditary and a knockout found footage horror movie for the live stream era. Experience the first ever yoga-themed found footage horror film, and don't miss the film viewers have called extremely frightening and upsetting. Available now on digital anywhere you rent or buy movies online, including Prime Video and Apple Plus.
Reason I just really wanted to scream boo at you and scare you. I don't know why. Terrified's got me in a shitty, in a little shit mood, huh?
I don't even know where to go from there. Oh, hello, listeners. Welcome to our very first Patreon episode of Scarred for Life. Scarred for adult life, scarred forever, scarred for something or another. Scarred for something. Our monthly Patreon exclusive episode where we dig into the things that have terrified us as adults that maybe hopefully won't be covered on, you know, the regular feed. I'm Terry.
And I'm Mary Beth. And for our first episode, we, of course, had to cover this movie that has been brought up more times than not on our main episodes. The movie that is most often brought up as a film that terrified our guests as adults. This is the Argentinian horror film Terrified that was released in 2017, directed by Damien Rugna. And for those of you who are unfamiliar, this film follows a series of supernatural events in a neighborhood in Buenos Aires. Very, very basic. But, I mean, it's not wrong.
It's not wrong.
I think this was one of those, one of the first, I think, big Shudder original movies. I remember this being a big deal because it was after Revenge, but this was a movie I think that people were really excited about for Shudder. But I know that you saw it before it was on Shudder. So, before we start talking about this movie more in depth, let's talk about how we first saw these movies, our first reactions, and why we're talking about it. And Terry, I love your fucking story about this movie, so I want you to go first.
All right. Yeah, so this came out, well, this was hitting festivals in the States in 2018. And one of the festivals it hit was Telluride Horror Show. And this was the very first festival that I had ever been to in person. Well, been to, period. It was the very first festival I covered. I went as a fan and not coverage because I didn't think I was big enough to like request press coverage. So I went there, paid the tickets, went to go see it. And I don't know if you guys know where Telluride is. It's in Colorado. It's in the mountains. It's a ski resort town. So it's up in the mountains. It was like a 14-hour drive from Omaha, Nebraska to there. That me and two of my best friends went.
So you drove all the way there? You didn't fly?
We drove all the way there.
Oh, I don't think I realized you drove all the way from Omaha.
Well, the thing is that, like, we could have flown into Denver and then taken, like, basically a prop jet from Denver to an airport, like, an hour outside of Telluride. But one of my friends, Nikki, my best friend that I've known since high school, does not like to fly, period. She is a horrible flyer. And I was like, that's probably not a good idea. Plus, then you'd have to, like, get an hour long trip. I think they might have shuttles that go, but like you're also looking. So it just wasn't going to be feasible. Yeah. So we drove instead 15 hours. And I don't know if you know this, Mary Beth, but when you go up a mountain, you actually go up a mountain. You don't just like materialize at the top of a mountain. And if you're me and you're driving up to Telluride and you are driving on basically the outskirts of the road and about 2 to 3 feet, at least that's what it looked like to me. It might have been 5, but we're not very far, is a cliff. No guard railing. No anything else. It is road, cliff. Oh, hello, trees that I'm seeing the tops of. Who sees the tops of trees?
You, apparently.
Yes. And I'm driving up here. Shit. And I was like, I remember specifically because I'm driving and I am having a panic attack. And I'm like, guys, this might be the worst time to tell you this, but I'm afraid of heights. And that is a kind of a misnomer because I'm okay flying. I can look out the window flying. I'm okay on roller coasters, on things that shoot you up in the sky. Okay on that. But anything that, like, I feel there's really no protection, in this case, driving up a fucking mountain, my balls retreated into my body. TMI, but that is what happened.
No, I am.
And I'm white knuckled on my car going, please don't crash, please don't crash, please don't crash. Thinking about how far down if I hit a pie, because this is in October too, no snow, but we're talking like getting into the winter months. And I'm like, please don't hit an icy patch. Please don't hit an icy patch. Because I'm like, what am I going to do? What is going to happen? Me and 3 friends gone off the cliff. Like, that is what is in my mind. So I bring this up because we get to the top of the mountain after a 15-hour drive that we did in one day. We get there and we're at a high altitude. So high that, like,
I'm drinking. You probably feel good. I was going to say, you probably don't feel good.
Or no. Like,
you just feel exhausted. Shit.
Can't breathe very well because the high altitude, getting used to that. We think it's a great idea to drink that night. Then the next day, our first day at the festival.
People who don't know, higher elevations, you get drunker faster.
Then the first day of the festival, we're walking around this beautiful town because there's 3 different theaters and they're spread out across the town. So we're like having to hoof it to some places and there's like a trolley that we can take sometimes. But we are spending the entire day going from movie to movie and we're so exhausted by midnight. And Terrified is the last movie of the night.
It was a midnighter?
It was the midnighter. Let's just say we got inebriated.
Yeah, you did.
And if you know, you know. I'm not going to say it out loud, mm-hmm. But if you know, you know. And I'm sitting in this movie and I'm realizing, oh, fuck, this is not the movie to be inebriated in. I was absolutely fucking terrified and terrorized through the very first act of this movie. I was just like, what is even happening? My eyes were like drooping because I'm so tired, but at the same time, like wide open, like, I can't handle this. What am I watching? What is happening? What is going on? I wasn't quite sure if it was making things worse or better because everything seemed to be very slowly happening. But at the same time, I'm like, I can't handle this. And I was looking at my friends and I'm like, I don't know if I can watch this entire movie. Like, I'm just like fucking panicking in the movie theater.
Was there like a moment specifically that like, I mean, the movie just kind of starts like, and doesn't stop, but was there a moment that, like, really fucked with you? Or at least was the one that was, like, run?
There were two. The first was that we're opening up, and the woman is slamming her head against the walls of the bathroom. And part of me was, because I was inebriated, I was sort of giggling. Because I was like, I can't believe this is happening. What is going on?
You're like, where am I?
Because she looks like she's on, like, a conveyor belt, just, like, bash.
Yes.
And then
yes.
Bash. And I'm just like, this is either very hilarious or this is the most horrifying thing I've ever seen. And then it was the scene that just broke me was the scene with the kid at the table. And we'll dig into this more in depth. Mm-hmm. That we're staring at him. And again, time is moving so slowly that I'm just like, is this kid going to move? He's going to move. Why isn't he moving? what is happening? We're still sitting staring at this kid. When is he going to move? And then when the milk got spilled over, I was like, nope. I need to get out of here. But I was surrounded by people on both sides. And like, I can't go anywhere. I am stuck in this fucking hellhole. And I'm like, I can't handle this. I cannot handle this. And I think I might have fallen asleep. I'm not quite sure because I don't remember a whole lot of some of the middle part of this movie. Uh-huh. But it was just a fucking nightmare, Mary Beth. I could not handle it. And I was like, why did I do this? Why did I make that decision? And that was
dramatic.
My first viewing of this, which is why I definitely wanted to talk about this. But I know you have also seen this movie, and this is also one of your choices. So what is your first time watching this movie?
Mine's way less fun than yours. mine was, I watched it by myself when I was living in Chicago. So when I lived in Chicago while I was in grad school, this came out on Shudder.
Mm-hmm.
Grad school for me was a lot of staying inside and smoking weed and doing homework by myself, you know, which is not much different than what I do now, let's be perfectly honest, as myself. But I had heard that it was on Shudder. I'd heard amazing things about it. I'd heard it's so scary. And I was like, all right, it's Friday night. I am going to watch a scary fucking movie. I'm going to turn the lights off. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put on my noise-canceling headphones. And oof. I'm going to get fucking scared. So the part with the man under the bed.
Yeah.
So, okay. So what I was doing, I was watching it at my desk.
Okay.
So I had, it was like my desk was next to my bed and I was in my desk chair. As soon as my bed was up. So there was more space for storage underneath. So as soon as the bed stuff started happening, I was like, fuck that, and moved to my bed with my bed within the court. My bed was in the corner, so I had my back to the corner so I could see all parts of my room and know what was going on. Like, I had to see it. I didn't turn the lights on, but I at that point was like, this is actually really scary. Like, they weren't lying. Like, this actually is pretty fucked up. I was not expecting it to be so fucked up.
It lives up to the hype.
It does, though. And, like, it was, so that was my story. I was sober, though. I was stone cold sober when I watched this the first time. And it still scared the shit out of me. So my story is not as fun as yours, but it definitely, like, I tried to set this, I had the atmosphere going for it because I knew I wanted to be scared. And sweet, merciful Christ and a cracker scared the shit out of myself.
Well, I don't know what's worse, watching it in a movie theater full of people or watching it by yourself in your bed in the dark with noise canceling headphones. Like,
I'm biased. I think it's the one I did.
I honestly do too.
Because then I was like, well, now I have to go to bed and there's no one watching it with me to talk to me and talk me off the ledge. I definitely like put on like Jenna Marbles YouTube videos afterwards. I was going through a Jenna Marbles phase when I was in grad school. Ten years too late, but yeah.
Fuck. I mean, I just can't imagine. I just can't imagine that is a kind of the perfect movie to just be kind of curled up in your bed and watching with noise canceling headphones because it's so fucking terrifying.
It really was. It was the right. It was a good move, I think. it was, and I'm glad I experienced it that way. I mean, like, I love doing that. I mean, a lot of us horror fans love doing that, and it's just so cool when you can actually have that moment where you're like, oh, I am terrified. Like, I am legitimately terrified. Like, it did that trick, and so I actually hadn't watched it again until today, when I rewatched it for the first time since I first saw it.
And I think I realized that I think what this movie does, and I mean, I think we're gonna dig into it more specifically, but as like an overall thing, I think what this movie does incredibly well is tap into childhood fears, because there's like the man under the bed, you know, we're introduced to him as the guy is like pulling his covers up and kind of peeking over the bed, which I did as a kid.
I still did it. I have a box spring, so we don't have like anything under the bed, but I used to do that.
Yeah.
I still do.
So there's that, and then also when there's a moment in the, I think towards the end of the first act, where another kid kind of, you know, is crawling into the backyard of the friends, and he sees something he shouldn't see with the kid, the dead kid at the table that turns to look at him. So there's like, I feel like there's these moments of like, it understands that we're innately afraid of the dark. We're innately afraid of things that we can't see. That kind of mood that really, on this watch, I was like, yeah, this really kind of brings me back to being a kid and watching something that, it's that high that I think we chase from being a kid and watching something that absolutely terrified us. It just, it brought me back to that kind of same feeling of like, I don't feel safe.
So I'm glad you brought that up because I kind of wanted to, I wasn't sure when we wanted to talk about this, but I'm going to bring it up now before we go into specific moments. But I was thinking about, like, what makes this movie so scary. Trying to think about what makes this movie so scary. Aside from the fact that there's, like, you know, scary shit happening. And, like, mm-hmm. But what makes it so terrifying? And I think something that stood out to me is this movie is always jump scaring you. This movie is always throwing things at you. So there is never a moment to relax. And
no.
We say that a lot about horror movies, but I think this is one of the best ways I've seen it done in a horror movie, is that, like, you are programmed from the beginning that you will not be able to predict when something is going to fucking jump out at you. So you are constantly on edge. You are constantly ready to be scared. And I think that this puts you in that headspace so quickly that you're ready. And by ready, I mean you're not ready, but, like, you're prepared right. And stressed and that kind of thing. So I think that is what makes this movie so scary. And I think that it's almost to its detriment, I will say. And I'll say this now, is that I think you wrote this in the notes, Terry, and I couldn't have agreed more with what you said about how it's not really character driven. It's like, mm-hmm. It's meant to be a spectacle. Like, this movie was right. Made to be a spectacle, but I think it knows that, which is why it works so well. Like, this movie wants to keep throwing this weird shit at you. Like, it's meant to make you shit your pants every 5 seconds. Like, and you know, a lot of movies get knocked for shit like that about these jump scares, but I think there's just a little bit more going on here that it's not just jump scare fodder. It's jump scare fodder with a little bit of extra sprinkled in.
Well, and I would say that the jump scares are earned. Like, it's not like a cat that jumps or some, you know, your loved person that puts their hand, the fuck?
Went with it too. I was just like, you're a love person. I'll fucking, yeah, sure.
You know, like a loved one putting their hand on your shoulder, like just appearing out of nowhere. I'm like
my love person now. Hello, love person.
Please do.
My love person. Sorry.
Pretty soon we're going to find out the wedding's off because of love person. I can't. No, can't.
Can't do it.
But, you know, it's not like one of those kind of like the cat jumping into frame or someone touching a shoulder that has no right to be there or someone closing a mirror and there's someone standing behind you. Like, there's none of those moments. They're all like well earned and they're well constructed to be the maximum number of what the fuck did I just see?
Well, and the other scary thing is that nothing scares these things away. Light doesn't scare them. Like, you seeing them doesn't scare them. Like, there isn't anything to protect you. And this particularly came up for me when thinking, when the part with Walter, the neighbor who has the weird tall man under his bed. No matter what he does, like, nothing scares it. And I think we're so used to having rules with, like, ghosts mm-hmm. and creatures and stuff of them being able, like, oh, you turn on the lights, they disappear. You don't, like, you do this, you do that, you're protected. Here, it's like, those rules don't exist anymore. You can't protect yourself. You're fucked. Like, that, when you don't, the rules are broken and you're like, I fuck. Mm-hmm. And then when they do explain the rules, which we'll get into, you're like, I don't understand the mechanics of this movie, I will say. We'll get there, but I still don't fully understand it. But that's fine. But, like, that I think is where the movie falls a little bit. It's just, like, trying to be very complicated. And I'm like, no, you didn't need to be that complicated. But we'll get there. But
I will say that when the experts are introduced, they know maybe a little bit more than us, but like they are fumbling around in the dark too. This isn't like Poltergeist where, you know, little Zelda is coming inside and like, your house is clean. Right.
They're just like, babe, I don't know what's going on. I don't know why this weird thing is coming out of your wall.
We don't have gay icon Zelda Rubinstein saying, house is clear, y'all. No, we don't have any of that. We have people that are like, you know, they have a little bit of familiarity with it, but they don't completely understand things. And obviously it doesn't help them in the end. So there's again, that idea of like no safety with this movie. And actually watching it this time, it kind of reminded me a little bit of like Ju-on or The Grudge or even Insidious to some degree, where like Insidious starts and it's just like starts, and then they move to another house and it still follows them. Like, it has that same kind of feel to this, where that movie was not safe. Like, you never felt safe in that movie. But then in Ju-on or The Grudge, you know, it's sort of nonlinear. It doesn't really tell you everything. You're following these different characters, and it's spelling out the story that kind of fits together in puzzle pieces that we have to, like, figure things out. So I do think this movie takes a lot from J-horror, in particular The Grudge, to make it feel like you're not safe.
Yeah, and I also think it has that kind of almost anthology film-like vibe that Ju-on has, in terms of, like, things are happening in the same area, the same house, to different people, and, like, there is some connective tissue, but it's all happening. It's happening simultaneously, but in different forms. And I think I like that format a little bit better than when the last half, when it kind of all comes together and it's, like, kind of more like a ghost hunting, ghost hunting movie more than anything else. I mean, it's still terrifying, but I think the biggest strengths are in those, like, almost segments of, like, okay, so. And we'll just jump into Act One, because Act One is this kind of anthology. So anthology-ish kind of scenario. Because then we have, you know, the cold open is the couple who the woman hears voices coming out of the drain.
Absolutely terrifying, by the way. There's a really good visual gag with, like, there's a bubble that's formed over the drain. And it, like, is, like, breathing with the drain. Like, it inflates and then kind of goes down and inflates again. What a small but creepy moment.
And, like, I forgot about that. Like, there's a lot of memories that kind of started coming back to me that I'd forgotten about this movie, because I think the cold open specifically with the woman dying and then the little kid were the two big things I remembered. So it's the most incredible cold open and cut to a title card, which, like, they said that I'm going to die, and then it goes terrified with, like, insidious kind of, like,
yeah
music. And you're like, oh no, I don't. That was when I was like, oh no.
Honestly, I think that's when that's when I immediately said, I think I made a bad choice.
I mean, it sets your shit up right away, though. Like, this movie is not fucking around. And then this gag where you hear a knocking sound and the husband is like, I am pissed off. The neighbor is, like, being loud and annoying, and he's trying to bother him. He comes back in and he's like, wait, that wasn't the neighbor.
That wasn't Walter.
Like, such a good, like, urban legend gag, you know, a little bit too, you know what I mean? And he goes into the bathroom, and his wife, like you were talking about earlier, a little janky looking of her body being thrown back and forth between the shower walls. Conveyor belted
across the shower.
And what is so, I mean, like, it's fucked up because she's obviously been doing this for, like, hours, and her body is absolutely destroyed. Like, because he doesn't go check on her in the shower because the shower is running. So he's like, she's in the shower, it can't be her. And then it's like, uh-oh. He finds her, and it doesn't stop. She doesn't, like, fall down. And he grabs her, it just keeps slamming her head into the wall. And that was another moment where I was like, this movie is not fucking around. Like, this will not let you go. Like, this is like a shark or some kind of horrific supernatural predator that once it has you, you fucked. Like, you're not going anywhere. And that is so scary.
He tries to stop her head from hitting the faucet. And it's just not happening. And he is, like, panicking. He is crying. He's telling her to stop, to stop, to stop. And obviously it's not her. The blood is, like, all over the fucking room. It looks like someone just threw paint everywhere. It's,
oh my god. But it's like, I think the kill, iconic, and the sound design, I mean, like, and I didn't clock the score at this part either, because the film has a pretty big score to go.
Oh, it's very bombastic,
very jump scares, but the score at the beginning, where it's not as, like, jump scare, is, like, kind of this creepy droning sound that I hadn't remembered, and that is just as uncanny, because you don't know what's going on, and it just adds to the confusion and the chaos of whatever is brewing here. And, I mean, like, it just, this entire segment just really starts this shit off strong. Like, you're ready to go.
Yeah. And I think it kind of plays with convention a little bit, because, you know, you think of, like, a haunted house movie and you hear the knocking, you know, it's like, oh, something supernatural is happening in the house, right? And then it kind of goes from there, you know, like Poltergeist, it starts small, chairs are moving across the floor, that kind of shit, right? Where here it's like, no, that knocking is your wife banging her head against the bathroom floor, bathroom walls. Like, it just starts at 100. It doesn't give you any time to, like, ease into the situation.
Well, and also, this isn't a haunted house, the same haunted house movie that you think, because it's not this house. Like, we're done with that house. We're almost done with, like, that guy and that house. Because then we move on to the next segment. We have him talking to the paranormal investigators as kind of a bridge between, like, hey, what happened with your wife actually happened somewhere else. And we're kind of, like, trying to figure out what's going on here. But we don't really know what's going on. But, like, hey, can you help us, like, figure out, like, tell us what's going on in your house? And then that's when we go to the next segment, which is their neighbor, Walter, who they thought was banging. And Walter's story is the one that made me want to piss my pants.
on this watch, it definitely was the one for me too. I don't know why it didn't affect me as much in the movie theater, because this is like, this is fucking nightmare fuel.
I watched it by myself next to my bed, so like next to your bed. I had like the actual space, and I was like, oh no, and like I had to like open my closet and turn the light on and check it, and then shut the door all the way, because I was like, not today.
Dennis Nedry.
What's the magic word? Fuck you, that's the magic word. Anyway.
But like, we get him, and again, it starts off with like, he is at the edge of his life. Like, he is exhausted. He has been trying to call this doctor, Dr. Albrecht, trying to get her to come take a look at his house because it's fucking haunted. She's not returning his phone calls. He's obviously losing it at work. He gets home, he's not sleeping. And then we get this masterful sequence where he's like in bed, looking down underneath his bed, and he leaves the cover up. And then he gets down off the bed and the cover falls back down. And we get the little stinger of the music score. Like, key in on this. But then what I love is that this, again, a small moment where he's back in bed and the lamp on his table turns off. And of course, the cord from that table is underneath his bed. And so he has to reach down under his bed to plug it back in. And you're just waiting for like a hand to grab his wrist. But no, that doesn't happen.
And that's where my laptop charger was under my bed. And I had to plug in my laptop charger while I was watching this movie. And I was like, I'm fucked. My hand is going to be eaten.
But I love that he like leans over and that's not what happens. Instead, we have the camera back under the bed. And we see the dude's fucking leg standing there as he takes off running away.
Like, what? And like, also there's found footage parts in this sequence because of me. I love that, because he sets up a camera to film what's going on, because he's like, something fucking weird. But again, this is a moment, he wakes up and his bed is moving, and the bed keeps moving while he's awake. Again, like a thing that in horror, it's like, oh, you're asleep and the bed moves and you wake up and you have no idea, but you wake up and it's like, haha, okay, cool, you're watching, like, we're not going away, like, So he sets up the camera and he captures the guy coming out from under the bed and watching him. And just to be gross, this creepy naked demon guy's got a really nice ass. Sorry, but he's got nice cheeks. He's got nice cheeks. Good for him. But
the better to chase you with, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. Like,
he does those, like, you know, stair aerobics or whatever.
He be doing his lunges. He's been doing them squats. Mm-hmm. Like, he's putting in the work.
Demon got back.
Demon got juicy.
Look at those in those booty shorts.
A little mesh crop top and little booty shorts.
Hell yeah. Queer icon?
Queer icon.
Maybe.
Reclaiming this so I don't get scared. But like,
hey, if the Babadook can be it.
It's true. No, it's true. But like, this segment is my worst nightmare of like something under my bed. And like, it is unabashedly under your bed too. Like, it is not just something that's like, maybe. It's like, haha, I'm here and I'm really tall and I'm going to scare the shit out of you and ruin your life. Like, that's exactly. And like, when he wakes up and all this furniture is rearranged all over the place, like, it's just, again, it's just going right into it. There isn't like the buildup. It's like something is just, we don't know the buildup. We don't know these characters. We don't really get to know who they are. We just get to know them at a very specific time in their life, which I think is a very obviously purposeful choice. Like, we're not here to know the characters. This isn't character driven. This is an ensemble situation that is just supposed to show you all of these scares and how fucked up the scenario is. We're not really supposed to know anything about these people, which I didn't really clock before, but I also think, again, they do it so well that it doesn't, there's just enough about the characters to like, there's a connection sort of, but
yeah,
Yeah, you know what I mean?
There's, yeah, I do, because there's, it gives you enough to kind of latch onto them. Because, I mean, there have been times where, you know, you're really exhausted, you're at your rope, and you're, like, at work, and you're fucking tired, and you just want to get some sleep, and you can't. So we have that. We have the man with his wife, who we get enough to see that they love each other, and then she gets her fucking head bashed in. Like, it's enough of, like, a trope to, like, create empathy in us, but it's not enough that it's like a slow burn descent into hell. This isn't, you know, an A24 movie where we're just seeing one of these characters slowly deteriorate over the course. We are at the end of that slow burn, and this is like all climax. That the first act is all climax. Yeah,
that's exactly it. Yes, that is exactly it. But then, and then we have our third house slash scenario, which I completely forgot about how we got. So this is the kid, the dead kid.
Yeah.
I forgot how we got here, though. I Me too. Totally forget that the kid gets hit by a fucking bus.
Yeah, he's going over to Walter's house.
I texted you in all caps. I was like, he gets hit by a bus. I fucking forgot.
I did too. Because, like, he goes over to Walter's house and you see him, like, trying to drink from, like, the faucet. And Walter is in his boarded up house and he's like, don't drink the water. Get out of here.
Yeah.
And it made me think that there's, like, it kind of increased this idea that, like, there's an infection in this, yes, in this place.
Yes, contagion. I was thinking about the contagion aspect.
And then he backs up and before you know it, dude, he gets hit by a bus, which, again, is also sort of, like, foreshadowed, because when the paranormal investigators are talking with Juan, they're like, when did it start? And he's like, it started with the accident, because that's what he saw, is the accident of the poor kid that gets hit by the bus and decides to come back.
This movie is killing a little kid immediately. Like, it introduces this little kid, and not a minute later, his ass gets run over by a whole fucking bus. Like, incredible. This movie is just like, yeah, fuck it, everything, fuck it. So, the kid, it's sad, the kid is dead, but then... I love how they introduce this too. The cops, like, a cop calls a paranormal investigator and is like, yo, bruh, you gotta get over here. Like,
we used to work together.
Like, this is, I don't know what to do. And they show up and it's like, the cops have already been there. And again, like, we are coming at the tail end of it. Like, all we see are little muddy footprints leading up into the house. And then
dirty handprints on the door, like scratching at the door. It's such a small moment that's really not addressed, because they address the footsteps moving up the fucking house, but they don't address the fact that there is like someone is pawing mud on the door. It's never really focused on, but that's such a small little environmental detail that I was like, ooh, what is going on here?
Yeah. And so they finally kind of show what happened, and the little boy is just sitting at the dining room table like nothing happened, but he's fucking rotted corpse. He's dead. He's very dead.
He is, and the cop is
like, and like, of course, somebody be like, oh, the mom went crazy and like buried the kid, but they're like, the mom doesn't have dirt on her. There's no, like, there's no trace of decay. The kid's got dirt under his nails, like he was buried.
Yeah, he, like, it's bloodied, like it's raw.
And so they're just,
which,
like,
is horrifying.
Exactly. Like, what is going on? And then the cop is like, my people have seen him move, and I have seen him move. And like, and right away, again, right away, he's like, I have seen him move. Like, this is not okay. Like, there is something very wrong here. The guy's like, well, just blame it on the mom. Like, we're just like, okay, let's lie about it now. And I'm like,
let's just bury that. Let's bury it again. And just pretend that nothing happened, so that the mom doesn't get locked away in a crazy bin, is basically what he says. And on top of this, the cop that calls the paranormal investigator, his name is Funes. He has been seeing Alicia. Like, they have a romantic relationship together. And the moment he starts talking about it is when the kid knocks over the glass of water and the glass of milk. And it's almost as if, like, this kid is not happy that he is hanging out with his mom.
I know, I got that, and I didn't remember that from this time.
Me neither.
Like, oh, I like that little, like, added thing of, like, fuck you.
Fuck you, man.
And then it's when all, and then everything, this is kind of when everything starts coming together into a more, like, cohesive linear narrative, is we have this, like, this paranormal investigator sees Albrecht outside taking photos of the house across the street, Walter's house. And we know that Walter was trying to call her to be like, help me. and he sees her, and he's like, hey, also, you should come see what's going on over yonder, because, boy, I got something for you to take photos of.
It's not contained in one place, lady.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, we got a reanimated corpse of a little boy just chilling. You want to help me put him in a freezer?
Ah, I know. They put this body in the freezer because it does make sense a little bit because they want to, like, move the body. By this time, it's, like, daytime. They want to move the body when no one's going to see them taking a fucking 10-year-old decomposing corpse out. I get it. But also, it's a little like, okay, this is kind of fucked up that you are stuffing this body in a freezer in the backyard. What is happening?
And it's like, okay, so we've seen all of these three things happen. They're like, all right, something fuckeroni is going on here. So we're going to, wow, look, we have three paranormal investigators.
Luckily, we have three
to split up between these houses. So each paranormal investigator gets a house, and then Fuentes goes with his colleague to one of the houses. And they're like, okay, cool. So we're going to, like, just figure out what's happening here. And so we start, this is where things start falling apart a little bit in terms of, like,
yeah,
trying to now give an explanation to what is going on here. Like, why is it going on, like, in three houses? Why, like, is, what's spreading it? What is going on here? And of course, you still get a shit ton of scares. There's an incredible moment where they're in a kitchen and the house starts sucking the blood out of one of the paranormal investigators. Yes. And I forgot about that. They're like, wait, it's sucking. And you hear the...
Like, yeah. Because, oh, like, God, they walk in and there's silverware dangling from the cupboard.
Yes.
And it, like, pierces Rosentalk's hand and mm-hmm. sticks him into the cupboard. Yeah. And then you hear the sucking sound and you can actually see the blood, like, moving upward as opposed to dropping. And it's, like, such an inventive, cool little moment that just, like, again, the ambiguity.
This movie of, like, giving these, like, these weird moments of, like, this is happening, we don't know why, we're not going to give you a visual, but it's going to add to the mystique of, like, there is something much bigger here than, like, a ghostie. Like, this is not Casper, this is not a poltergeist, like, this is something much weirder. And then that's when we get diving into, like, some other weird time space shenanigans that
I don't really understand. I'll be perfectly honest,
I don't get it either. I still don't. I think that's fine. I think they're, like, interdimensional beings, and they all exist at the same time. But then they also want to come into our, more purposefully come into our world?
Yeah, right? And they love blood, because apparently they have to clean up the blood really quickly, and time moves
that's
quicker in the house.
I didn't mention the time dilate. I guess because, like, we hadn't heard anything like this happening with previous. They, like, we didn't mm-hmm. hear about time dilation from other people or, like, anything like that. So they start putting together these theories, and I was like, I don't quite understand where that's coming from, but, like, okay, like, sick. But I will say, when they discover this, it's a really cool gag where Fuentes is on the phone with
With Jano,
and Jano's like, are you in the window? And he's like, no, I'm in the kitchen. And he's like, I see a guy in the window, but not always. So there's, like, a paint. It's, like, almost like it's, like, part of the window paint. On mm-hmm. one side of it, there's no one in the window. And on the other side, there's a creepy, scary, thin man. So it's, like, I think a really awesome visual representation of, like, something fucky is going on with time, space, dimension mm-hmm. stuff. And it's a really cool visual gag to really set that up in a really fascinating way.
And then we get a jump scare, because the moment the camera pans across one, it's, like, right in front of fucking Jono's face, and I jumped. I knew it was coming, and I still jumped.
Le shit my pants, as
the French would say.
As the French would say. So that, yeah. And so I think that introduction of the concept was really awesome, visually speaking. The follow through, still not totally sure it worked for me, but I think I loved the way they set it up with that kind of visual.
Yeah, because they're talking about darkness, light, two realities sharing the same place and time, darkness and light. And I'm like, okay, you were saying a lot of mumbo jumbo that...
Well, and I was like, but things were happening really at night sense. And during the day. But then it also seems like at one point, Fuentes falls into another dimension. But that is, like,
it all gets a little bit unclear when things start coming out of walls and have glowing green eyes and things like that, and talking about how they're infecting the water and making nests in the water. And things are growing out of the water. And I was like, wait. Where did that come from? Where did we get that information?
Talks about dimensions organized like an orange. Water is the channel used by microscopic beings. They can use our body. And that is when the hand reaches through the crack in the wall and
it smashes her goddamn head.
Smashes her.
Oh, I forgot about that part. That was incredible.
Mm-hmm. I jumped there too.
Like, they're like, why are they so aggressive? And then it just slams her head into the fucking wall. And I was like, got him. But it's like, I think it does lose a little bit of steam here because I think they tried to make Flynnis here like a hero character. And we don't, the reason why the other parts work so well is because we didn't spend a lot of time with these characters. So we didn't have time to like question them and like care about them outside of the specific scenario. But with him, it's like, okay, so now he's having heart attacks and he can't really hear. And we're playing with like weird coagulation. It just all gets a little bit too much. I think loses sight of what made this like the beginning part so good.
Yeah,
I didn't want to make a cop hero. I think I don't think I thought about this as much the first time, but this time I was like, he's just like another like white cop hero character, and like while it obviously doesn't have a happy ending, I was just like, I don't really care about it.
Well, I think that the first act is just so much is getting thrown at you. It's like one horror set piece to another. And like I said, it feels like the climax of three different movies smashed together into one little fantastic first act. And then things slow down when we're introducing a whole new set of characters. And it's basically old people come in and save the day, or try to save the day and fail miserably. But like we follow them and we have, again, no connection to any of them except for Jano, who, you know, is introduced with the lady and her dead kid segment.
Yeah.
But like, it the pacing kind of slows down after a very kinetic first act that on this watch, I was a little bored, I would say, with the second act. It didn't hit me as much as I remember it doing on the first watch. I think I started to see a little bit of the seams, I think, of the storytelling in terms of that.
Yeah, I
narrative
agree
aspect of it. So that's a negative, but I think that once we get into the third act, and again, yes, it is Flynnis, but him running away, the woman with her neck bent backwards running.
And she's like, they're torturing us. When she said they're torturing us, I was like, fuck. And then, so this all clicked a little bit more for me this time, though, because when you said they're torturing us, and then it seems like I kind of realized, oh, this is now Flynnis is in his own personal hell. That's kind of how I perceive this ending, where he is now seeing like the love of his life get mad at him, kill herself, the kid is still there, like he is in his own personal version of hell, is kind of how I was interpreting it around, like this time around, and everyone else is kind of experiencing their own version of hell as well, which I think is so fucking scary.
Yeah, no, I think some of these narrative beats don't necessarily work as well as the first act, there are some really disturbing aspects to it, and that is one of them. Him seeing the woman that he's been, you know, having a relationship with, you know, blaming him, saying that, you know, like, you stuffed my kid in the you know, the refrigerator, all that kind of stuff is deeply disturbing on like a not on a visceral level, not on a you know, horrible things are getting smashed against wall level, but like on a just a, this is some fucked up mental psychological horror stuff.
I thinking about the, like, we're torturing us part and like his I think that again, like, it does kind of get lost a little bit at the ending, but there is something really fucked going on there with like the way this is all coming together. And then we have our final shot or our final sequence where this guy from the first, it kind of is, it's like a bookend. The guy from the first segment at the beginning, more investigators are coming to talk to him about, like, have you seen this guy? Like, what do they talk to you about? And he goes, did that guy come with you? And he points to the back. Mm-hmm. And they're like, who are you talking about? He's like, he came in here with you. And then it reveals one of the investigators who looks like he's been horrifically burned. And he starts moving chairs. And the final shot is that fucking chair coming out the camera.
Yes, which is such a great, you know.
It's such a good.
But the thing is that, like, so the director, Demian?
Yes, maybe.
He has been working on a sequel to this. And he had been writing it ever since that first one happened. And his idea would be that it would start right after the first one finished. So seconds after you see this chair flying into the screen.
Yeah.
He's like, he wanted to pick up immediately there. And he says also you get to know a little bit about what's going on in this town, but it's not his main interest to explain it, nor does he want it to be the audience's. But he wanted to, like, pick up literally where the first movie ended. This movie, I think from what I understand, it sounds like it's kind of tied up with some rights issues, because when it got bought, so like Netflix and Shudder acquired the original, then they got offered to shoot the remake. And he says one of the things that he fought for was having a chance to do a sequel to the original film, because the studio gets to own everything, the characters, the music, the brand, and so on. So he's like, so while I'm the first option to direct the American sequel, you never know what's going to happen. And he wanted some leverage. If they do, because there's been talk about them remaking this film, and there's one moment in this that I was like, this would be kind of cool to do, and it would be if you were to, instead of remake it, back in that, when the investigators are first talking to Juan, they're like, this happened in the U.S. in 1998, and there's a lot of similarities, and I was, because there's that line, and that's why they brought Rosentalk in that first segment.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And he brings up it happened in America in the 1998. Yes. That would be a fucking awesome way to do American version of this movie.
That would be so good.
Because then it would be like a prequel. That is what, if you're going to, listen, movie producers, if you are listening to this and you're a Patreon, well, thank you for subscribing to us and supporting independent podcasting. But also, if you wanted to do American remake, do this instead. And make it in the U.S. Make it like a...
I would be very down for that. And I mean, again, it makes sense. It's not like some weird shoehorn thing.
Right. He also is tapped by Shudder to distribute a new film that he is working on that sounds really good, called When Evil Lurks.
Oh.
It's about two brothers in a small village that discovered a man infected by demons who seems about to spawn more evil. And trying to get rid of the monstrosity, they incidentally make everything considerably worse. And that was supposed to start filming this year.
Oh, fuck.
And it's already been picked up by Shudder, so that would be amazing to see.
He knows how to do scares, so I cannot fucking wait. I'm so glad we revisited this movie. It's so good. Like, even when things fell apart a little bit, it's so good as shit. It's so scary. Like, it still got me. Like,
I mean, the first act is... And I honestly think that when people think about this movie and think about being terrified by it and the things that really jumped out of him, I believe it's the first act.
I agree. I think so too. I think the first act is where, like, a majority of these really incredible scares do kind of reside.
Because it's what I remember. In fact, when I was watching this and I was like, oh, this is happening all very quickly. And then the kid part, for some reason, I thought the kid part was much, 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 much later in the movie.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure my idea of time was really fucked up by this point.
And I forgot how long the stuff was at the end, like with the paranormal investigation stuff. Yeah, but I mean, it's still scary shit, guys. It's still on Shudder if you want to check it out. If you haven't checked it out before and you want to get scared, it's there for you. And if you just want to get scared again, rewatch it. It's there. Spooky season's here. It's time to start rewatching that scary shit. It's like it's a perfect Halloween watch. I think it's a great, it's not good to show people who don't like getting scared, but I still think it's a good, like, it's a good horror movie night movie, because also I think if you really want a good jump scare movie, like, that is the one. Well, thank you everyone for listening to our first Patreon episode of Scarred for Adult Life. Maybe we'll have a better title for this at some point, but this is what we're working with for right now. These will be coming up once a month on Patreon, and we are going to do a post where we will have people vote or suggest films for us to cover. Contemporary horror films that have come out in the last 5 to 10-ish years that we'll have, more like 5-ish years, that we probably won't cover on the podcast just because they're so new. We want your suggestions and to hear what scared you.
Yeah.
So please let us know. You can also let us know through email. You can scarred for life podcast at gmail.com. You can email us there. And you can also talk to us on Twitter about what we should be covering, because I'm at MB McAndrews.
And I'm at Gailey Dreadful.
And of course, don't forget to follow the podcast on Twitter at Scarf Podcast.
Yes, and thank you again so much for subscribing to our Patreon. It means a lot to us to have that extra funds to help, you know, pay for some of the costs so that we can keep creating content for you. It is really nice, so thank you for that.
So if you like this, share it and let people know that we have a Patreon now. We'd love to get as many people on this as possible, so thank you so much. And again, thank you to Eric Power for our artwork. Thank you to Sean Keller for our music. We're still using all that stuff here. Mm-hmm. And thank you to all of our patrons for listening. Please stay safe out there. Most importantly, stay creepy.
And until next time.